You know, for the longest time before having kids, I didn't think that was a real thing. That whenever you would get in trouble, I thought my parents were the only ones who would say, Peter Joseph Burns, what are you thinking? And now I realize, as a father, I use it all the time. For my daughter, Bo Victoria, when you hear the middle name. Or Katie Evelyn George, whenever I use that, that's name. When you know things. Is that not your middle name? What is Evelyn? Your middle name? I thought that, yeah.
We're not doing this. Nope.
I swear to God, I thought your middle name was Evelyn. How the hell did I get Evelyn George?
Because Mike A., our producer on Sunday, calls me Catherine Evelyn or something. Like, I call you Peter McKenzie Burns, and that's not your middle name.
This is awkward. I did not know that. Luckily, you're not offended. Peter Burns, Katie, not Evelyn George here. Remember, guests on the Dan Le Batard Show up here via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Soccer is back. No middle names there on ESPN+, Serie A, FA Cup, MLS, and more. Original series, studio shows, 30 for 30 documentary, all in HD on your favorite device. The beautiful game lives on ESPN+. Sign up today at ESPNplus.com. We'll be joined by Taylor Zarzer here on that Pennzoil Performance Line right after the Sports Center update from Katie Victoria George?
That's not it either. Dang. Amazon Peter McKenzie Burns announced on Wednesday that it will be removing Washington Redskins merchandise for sale while the team considers a name change. When asked on a conference call whether he would play or not, J.J. Watt said, I don't think we're at a point yet where people are making that decision because we don't have enough information yet to be making decisions like that. So I think that is a very fluid process, and I think it keeps coming up. Obviously, the report date gets closer and closer, but as of right now, we really don't have enough information to make a decision like that. That's what I would say. For all the latest headlines and information, tune into SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
On the next SportsCenter update, can we just find some glimmer of good news? I don't care how small it is. I don't care if like a 12-year-old like learned to ride their bike for the first time. If we can get like just one small nugget in the SportsCenter update that's positive, that would be awesome. Joining us right now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, runs PGA Tour Radio for SiriusXM, one of my best friends, and also college football for ESPN. He is Taylor Zarzer. And Taylor, right now, give me something positive about college football. Like I know Ohio State paused their stuff. I know Ivy League's looking back for the spring. Give me something positive in the world of college football, what you're looking forward to.
Oh, man, that is a tough question. I would say just how desperate we are and to get it back. The anticipation is always so high because the off season seems longer than any other major sport has in the calendar. And I think that this year, just given all that we're going through, how divided we are, how remote we are, unconnected, if you will, in that I think that it's made us want college football, at least as much as I can ever remember in my life. So I guess that's the biggest positive, is just that, guess what? The truth is we all really, really love college football.
Here's something positive. Take a spin with me on this. Change the way I think, Taylor, about Bryson DeChambeau. I know nothing about this guy, and then my feed all of a sudden on Twitter is just meme after meme after meme of this kid bulking up. And then I follow the tournament last weekend. I see that he has a conversation with the cameraman, and then I actually listen to the comments he made after the third round about how cameramen shouldn't film vulnerable situations that happen on the course. If I'm judging Bryson DeChambeau, tell me why I shouldn't and why he's a good person and somebody to root for.
Well, I'm not sure I can. I've spent a lot of time around the guy, and the guy is obsessed with the figuring out things that no other golfer has before, and candidly, he's obsessed with himself. I mean, this guy is all about self-improvement every single day, and it has come at the expense of relationships, whether it's been in his own life, you know, off the golf course or on the golf course. It's not kind of like Patrick Reed, where the guy just constantly makes the wrong decision or does something that angers everybody. He's just so in his own lane that I think that it's frustrated a lot of other people, and certainly what happened last week as he went on his way to win in Detroit was something that was totally uncalled for. And I can't find anyone that I connect with that's a player on the tour or that is involved with the PGA Tour that defended how he handled that situation. I mean, I've talked to guys that have won a number of PGA tournaments, Hall of Famers, that were outraged by the way that he acted and don't think that anybody's above the game and you hit a bad shot, hey, them the breaks. So that was a poor look. I mean, Bryson, I think down deep is a good guy that once you're around him, as is the case with most people that are misunderstood, you see that, you know, he's got similar interests that you do. It's just he comes off so strong every time you're around him. And I'm a bull in a china shop. I'm here to dominate, not really care what anybody else thinks. And then after a while, I think you see that the guy, you know, does genuinely care about others and care about the game. But Katie, that would take a long time, I think, in order for you to change your mind. I think it would for most people right now.
Is that the same thing that people said about Peter Burns during his collegiate golf career?
Oh, I was very punchable. I had puka shell necklaces, I think, at some point. I think I did the sun in my hair, which is probably comes to no shock of anybody who's been listening to that, where it kind of like blonde your hair, but it just turned
orange. We know what it is.
Very punchable at that point, Taylor.
Maybe by his late 30s into his 40s, like once he becomes married and has children, all of a sudden he'll become like the most approachable, fun-loving guy in the world, like PB has. But he is in his mid-20s. It's interesting, Katie, because Rory McIlroy, 6 years ago, after he won his last major championship, the PGA Championship, I did an interview with him afterwards, and he said, "Golf is the most important thing to me in the world right now." 6 years later, Rory is ranked number one in the world, and it is not the most important thing. His wife is the most important thing. And certainly becoming a father in the near future is a very important thing. He loves golf. He loves his job, but he's not in the same place he was 6 years ago. Bryson is exactly where Rory was 6 years ago. He could care less about anything else other than dominating the game. This week, he is in Denver working out at some facility, trying to get even stronger after the 50 pounds he's already gained in the last year to try to get even more clubhead speed and more power for next week's tournament, the Memorial Tournament there in Ohio. So this guy is not interested in anything other than domination on the golf course at the moment.
But at this point, has anybody ever been great and not just been kind of an SOB? I mean, you look at Jordan at the top of his game. You look at now, of course, Tiger. I mean, just the stories about Tiger when he was at in the 2000s just killing the golf world. He was that guy. I mean, has there ever been a very extremely likable number one golfer or a guy on that quest for it, Taylor? I don't know.
I think Rory's that guy, Peter. I think he has become kind of the spokesman for the PGA Tour in the last year or two. Anytime there's a hot button issue, whether it's golf related or not, everyone comes to Rory and he gives you a thoughtful answer. And he is extremely well liked by everyone out there. I think it's kind of taken a little bit of time for that to happen, but he is. He's number one in the world. And I think that there are other golfers. And Arnold Palmer was the ultimate, and obviously that was 60 years ago. But without him, I don't think the game of golf would be anywhere close to where it is today. And he is the most beloved player probably in the history of the game. And there weren't rankings then, but there was no question going into the 1960s, Arnold Palmer was the best player in the sport. So there are a couple of examples. But to your point, yeah, I think it takes a tremendous amount of cockiness. It is the ultimate individual sport, so you have to have this opinion of yourself that is so high, and sometimes that can rub people the wrong way.
Taylor, as we were coming onto the show, we got word that Tiger Woods is playing in the Memorial next weekend. How excited are you to see him back on the course, and what led to this decision for him to get back out?
Well, a couple of things, Katie. First of all, I'm excited because he looks as healthy as I can remember. This guy has gone through so many injuries and probably will still battle his body in the years to come. But just watching him at the match last month, or I guess, yeah, more than a month now when he played with Phil and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, that's as good as I've seen Tiger physically look and hit the golf ball in a long time. And keep in mind, he won the Masters and won a tournament in Japan last year, and he didn't look as good then to me as he does now. He sent out some videos on social media hitting shots in recent weeks, and he still looks that healthy. So I'm excited. I think this guy, even though he hasn't battled for four straight days on the tour, is going to get right back in there and be competitive because I think his talent is unmatched in the history of the game. In terms of why it's taken this long for him to come back, I think he's looking forward at how bundled the schedule is going to be because of the pandemic. He's going to have to play three FedEx Cup playoff events in August, a PGA Championship in August, and then you've got the U.S. Open in September and the Masters in November. So with all of that golf that's in front of him, typically in a time of the year that he doesn't play much, I think that's why he's been very cautious coming back and he's waited this long.
we're going to see patrons in Augusta this year, you think?
Man, my crystal ball every day, Peter, tells me something different. I'm obviously just desperate for college football this year. Love being part of those games. So fulfilling to go into those stadiums and SEC stadiums and see them packed on Saturdays. So I'm remaining hopeful that that happens, and I think that in a similar way, the Masters, there's no better sporting event, at least for me, to go to each year. And what makes it so great is that there aren't electronic scoreboards. You don't have your cell phone, and yeah, the crowd tells you who just made a birdie. You all look around at each other and say, oh, that's a Tiger roar. Oh, that's a Rory roar. Oh, that's a Phil roar. And that's what's so special about that place. And to not have that at Augusta National would be so surreal. All of this is so surreal, but that would certainly, in all of sports, I think be one of the strangest feelings to not have those roars at Augusta National. So, I mean, we have a lot of time, right? 3-4 weeks ago, I think all of us would be sitting here saying, oh, we're headed in the right direction. We're gaining on this. Fall looks great. Who knows where we're going to be 3 or 4 weeks from now? So hopefully everyone's wearing a mask that's listening to us right now, and we'll be in a better place in a few weeks.
Last question for Taylor Zarzur, joining us here, Peter Burns, Katie George, and the Dan Lebatard Show. The only thing that would be weirder than not having patrons at Augusta would be a Ryder Cup without fans. And I think that was a pretty big change. How does that affect? I mean, what were your thoughts on the postponement of that?
Well, first of all, it brings back memories of your behavior at the last time we had a Ryder Cup on American soil, where everyone was losing their minds in Minnesota. It's the right decision for the reasons you just referenced. The Ryder Cup, I think, requires fans. It's just as the years have gone on, it's been the ultimate team experience in golf, and there really aren't any others. I mean, President's Cup does a very good job of trying to mimic that, but the Ryder Cup is in its own lane, and so it's just, you know, and the other thing is the team aspect, where you bring your family, you bring your loved ones, you bring your brother, your sister, you bring the people that care most about you to the actual event, and not to be able to bring that traveling party with the team, I think, was also a factor, and they made the right move to back it up a year. Hopefully when we're in September 2021, we'll be in a much better place. But I know that the finances certainly are an issue, but I think ultimately in terms of the interest level and for all those participating, it's the right move to wait till next year to go to Wisconsin, and hopefully everybody's fired up and they're able to be there on the property.
Isn't there more to this story, though, outside of Peter's just bizarre, reckless behavior as a fan?
There is much more to the story,
Katie.
We're
going to talk about this.
No, we're going to talk about it, Taylor. I thought so. He just confirmed it.
We are up against a break. We have to go.
How convenient.
We cannot confirm any of that. Taylor Zarzur joining us. Hey, great stuff. Hopefully we are listening to you on the calls for college football here coming up this fall. Talk to you later, bud.
Thanks, Dave.
Robert Taylor Zarzur, and I'm pretty certain you need to refer to her as Catherine, not Katie Evelyn, but Catherine fill-in-the-blank George.
There it is. It does seem regal, right? There seems to be like this Instagram model wave that she needs to do.
Okay. Bye, Taylor. Thank you for joining us.
Peter Burns, Katie George. Katie, what do we all got?
Well, as we get back to business, Grainger wants to remind you that small things can make a big difference, like marking safe distances with floor tape and posting reminders to wash hands. And as always, Grainger is there to help, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, 24/7 support, safety recovery guides, and more. It's part of their commitment to help you adapt and recover in these challenging times. Learn more by visiting Grainger.com/recovery. Grainger for the ones who get it done.
Thank you, Katie George. Follow us on Twitter, Katie_George05, myself at Peter Burns, ESPN. And no, you're not going to get that story, Katie, because the statute of limitations has not gone by.
What?
This is the Dan Lebatard Show. Wait, Billy, what was the back? I love the rejoins. Nobody does rejoins at Sports Talk Radio better than this team over here at the Dan Lebatard Show. So what's the story behind the person calling in and giving play-by-play? And was it actual G? Who was it, Billy?
Okay, so it was every year I take off, if it's a day game, to go to opening day. I've been to all the Marlins opening days since they started, so I always go with my family. It's a thing. So I took off the day, and it was a 12:30 first pitch or something. So I wasn't in a work that day, and they had me calling in throughout the day, kind of updating what my preparation was for the game, whatever. And it led up to the first pitch of the season, and it was the first season that Derek Jeter owned the Marlins, and it was the first game of the year the Cubs were in town against the Marlins. And we were building up to the moment to see what this would all lead to, because people were kind of down on what had happened in the offseason, trading away Stanton, all the players, whatever.
Yeah.
And then the very first pitch of the game of the baseball season, home run by the Cubs.
Yeah. And there we go. The story of the Marlins at that point. By the way, play-by-play is impossible. And like for those who have never had a chance to do it, it is impossible. Because I got absolutely just hammered. 11D crowning Cokes with Josh Abbott, country western artist out of Texas. He was visiting me in Denver, Colorado. We decided to go to the Rockies. And they have one of these things where like you pay $15, you buy all these tickets, and you get to go call like half an inning. If you've ever done that, or ever seen it, make sure you do it. Because once you do it, the appreciation that you have for guys that call games and girls that call games for a living would be off the charts. Absolutely off the charts. Billy, you did nail the home run call.
It was 2 seconds of it, and Dan started immediately talking over it. But it made me appreciate even more people that do it on radio. Because TV, at least you could pause a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you could see the action, you know what's going on. Radio, you can't give them like 4 or 5 seconds of dead air. So you need to be talking for 3-4 hours straight and just hope that you're making sense and hope that you're describing what's going on while not missing something that's happening. So like you can't start a story in radio and then have something big happen and just cut off your story. I don't know how the radio people do it.
It's impressive. Katie, you've ever called anything? Have you called a match, a game of any sort?
Yes, I have. Play-by-play or color?
Yes, play-by-play.
Yeah,
or color, either one.
Both. I do color for ACC Network Volleyball, and then I did play-by-play in college for the Louisville women's softball team. Whoop, whoop. But enough of this conversation. I know what you're doing. You're trying to make me lose focus, and I'm not. Devin, did we clip what Taylor just said in the last segment about something about Peter? I need to hear that back to get the verbiage like exactly right. Can we play that?
All right. By the way, before we wait, I don't know what you're talking about. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. And I feel like I should have known that about you. I didn't know that you currently did. I don't know your middle name today, and I didn't know that you still call things.
I see what you're doing. So let's go back to the story of the Ryder Cup, of what happened, and unpack it. We're circling back. We're unpacking. Whatever phrase you want to use, tell the story now.
Give it up.
He's speechless. This never happens.
I'm trying to text somebody to see if I can tell this story because I don't.
Well,
know
you can. So here we are. You guys alluded to it. If you allude to it on radio, you have to tell it.
Fine. I've been told you can say anything on radio once, and this might be the last time I ever say something like this. Hazeltine 2016. I saw a man open mouth kiss Tiger Woods. Here's the story behind it.
Wait, what?
Here's the story behind it. I've never told this. I can't believe I'm doing this. It's the Levitard Show. I get an opportunity to go up to Hazeltine 2016 last round. I get somebody invite me. They said, listen, I got you. I got a media pass. Just get your butt up here. After you call the games on SEC Network, fly up there. We got you inside the ropes. I get there. I get the pass. And we're inside the ropes. It's one of the most electric experiences ever. We're sitting in a part. Bill Murray's going crazy. The crowd is just absolutely ranting. The first tee, it goes off, right? And I'm like, this is going to be awesome. So we walk inside the ropes for the majority of the day. And at the end, or in the middle of the round, we find out that one of the guy that I'm there with, his buddy, his college teammate, is a private pilot for one of the guys on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. So we start drinking beers. We're having the greatest time, right? So the pilot guy says, hey, if we win, I'm going to get you guys into the team hotel tonight. Like, we are partying. Like, we haven't won the Ryder Cup USA. This thing's going to be off the hook. I can get you in. We're like, dude, this is awesome. Yada, yada, yada. We're there. We see Reed and Sergio go after it. Mickelson, everybody's just fantastic, right? So we get in. And they win. And he texts us. He's like, you coming? So at that point, the U.S. American team and the European team were both staying at a Sheraton there in Minnesota.
Shocking.
So they're staying at the same hotel. And so it's a lot of security. The only people there allowed are friends and family. So he texts us. He walks us into like this side room. We get in. And we're inside this huge lobby, and there's like 80, 90 people there, and it's all friends and family, and some of the players would come out of this room and say hi. And so we're like, man, this is really cool. You know, we're getting to see some of the players. So what ends up happening is after about an hour of that, I'm like, all right, kind of thought this was going to be a little bit cooler. I really wanted to go into this special like VIP room where all the players, there's a DJ there. Like you can tell that's where all the fun's happening.
So you're just with friends and family at this moment.
Right. I'm in like with Jimmy Walker. I knew him in college and we grew up in Texas together. I saw him there.
So you're one room from the room.
We're in the hotel lobby, but you can tell like this conference room is where the real party is at. So that's where we want to be.
Okay.
After about an hour, we're getting ghosted on the text from the pilot. He's like nothing. So I'm like, all right, we're going to leave. So as we leave, we walk down a flight of stairs and I see the European team door room open. Okay. And
I see somebody. You look European. Okay.
Well, no, but so what ends up happening is so I go in and I look and the door stays open. So I'm like, dude, we're already 9 sheets to the wind. We're like, let's go. So we walk into the European team room and it is awesome. It is open bar, music being played. Now, this is, mind you, the European team just lost the Ryder Cup. Sergio Garcia's in shorts playing ping pong with Justin Rose. You got Matthew Fitzpatrick, who I can't even think his dude can drink at that point, and he's hammered. Rory McIlroy's just wearing a t-shirt, and we're like just wallflowers in the side of the room. Like, this is unbelievable. Like, we are here. We have crashed a European team party, and they're having the greatest time ever. Like, this is so much better than had we even probably got into the United States party. Yes, Katie?
Did you use an accent? Or
I did not use an accent. Did not want to. I wanted to be in the total background. Did not want to get caught. Because it's one of these things where you just walk up, and you're like, should you grab a bar, a drink at the bar? And you're like, well, you have to, because if you don't have a drink, you have to act like you're supposed to be there. So we stay there for like an hour. And at that point, we're like, this is awesome. I got an unbelievable story. We thought we were going to get into the U.S. team party. We got into the European team party. This is when it gets crazy. I got to pee real bad. So I decide, you know what? Before we leave, we're going to go.
I thought you were going to tease us to break.
I didn't just go like, I didn't give you a pee pause here on ESPN Radio. But there in Hazeltine at the Sheraton. I cannot believe I'm going to tell this story. Right by the bathroom, there is a door, and it's not marked, but it has a USA flag, and it has an arrow. And I'm like, dude, I think we kind of have to do this.
Dude.
And so I'm like, yeah, it was a total dude bro moment.
Dude.
Right? So it's like 12:30. We're hammered. We walk in this room. We walk down the hall, and it had been marked. And then all of a sudden, there's a special elevator. We get on the elevator. There's a USA flag on one of the buttons. We click the button. I'm just following the flags. We go through the kitchen. And at this point, I realize this is like one of these movie scenes, like in a Pacino or like De Niro movie where you're like, something's about to happen. So we walk in. We're like, dude, we're getting ready to go crash a USA party. This is what it's all about. It's great. We turn the corner and there's two secret like big security guys. You know, the guys
talking
that always
into their wrists. Yeah.
Yeah. No, seriously. Those guys that have the earpieces and they're right. Yeah. 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 Stu Gatz is not allowed in.
He's on the move.
Right. So when we see them, we're
the Eagles
like,
landed. Do you just want to keep doing this into my wrist as you tell your story?
Thank you.
Okay.
As we get there, we see the two guys and we're like, dang, we just got busted. Like we should have known there was going to be security in this room. We turn around and the two security guys goes, guys, this way. And I'm like, all right, I'm sure they're telling us that we went the wrong way. We turn the corner. We walk inside the USA's Ryder Cup private party. 20 players there, some of the caddies, Bill Murray is in there. And we're like, holy blank. What we figured out is that the two security guys thought we were European golfers because the only people that were coming through that door were from the European team party. And so,
It's because your hair spiked.
It's the hair. Very European hair.
It's got to be
okay.
The hair.
So, European team party. So, we are in there. I'm going to take a quick break.
No, my gosh.
Because I have to. We got to pay bills.
You are so annoying. You had the longest lead up to the climax of the freaking story.
A man kissed Tiger Woods, and I saw it. I'll tell that story coming up next here. Peter Rice, Katie George, the Dan Le Batard Show. Guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Remember, UFC heads the Fight Island. Title fight triple header, UFC 251, available exclusively on ESPN Plus. Subscribers $64.99. Going to be joined by Heather Dinich right now. We're going to get SportsCenter in a little bit, Katie, but I went long in telling my Tiger Woods story. I'm going to get to the punchline here momentarily, but I couldn't wait because I do want to get to Heather here. Heather Dinich, huge news yesterday. Ivy League decides, whoa, we're not playing in the fall. How big of a gut punch was this for people who want to see sports in the fall?
Well, I don't necessarily think, to be quite honest with you, that the decision makers at the Power Five level were looking at this as something that is going to influence how they make their decisions. Are they paying attention to it? Absolutely. Is every president at universities across the United States paying attention to what the president at Harvard says? You better believe it, right? But at the same time, I think that they're going to draw their own conclusions, and it's just an entirely different monster when you're talking about Power Five football versus FCS football as far as financials and everything.
Heather, you have a great article up on ESPN.com right now divulging and breaking down the conversation you had with the executive director of the Ivy League, Robin Harris. She kept referring to campus policies as being one of the main reasons why they decided that there won't be college athletics played in the fall. What are some of those campus policies that were decided a couple of weeks ago up at Ivy League institutions?
Right. So the eight schools have decided things like travel restrictions for students, faculty, and staff, which also obviously includes student athletes and coaches. There are also very stringent social distancing measures in place at almost all of those campuses, if not all of them. And, you know, restrictions on visitors. Think about how many people, friends and family members, come to see athletes play, as well as the number of people who can gather at this point. Some campuses have it limited to 25 to 50 people, which certainly isn't very conducive for fall competition. So those things are what Robin Harris told me collectively made it what she called impractical to have fall competition.
Heather Dinich, our college football insider, joining us here on the Dan Le Batard Show with Peter Burns and Katie George. Speaking of college football and college football playoff, you've got a good relationship with Bill Hancock. How much has he weighed in on this? Because obviously, they're the end-all, be-all at the end, the four-game playoff. What has he said about how they're monitoring the developments of college football?
He has not weighed in at all, honestly, in terms of the court of public opinion, right? Behind the scenes, I'm sure he's talking to the commissioners. But what he has told me is that whatever comes down, the playoff will be ready for it. And he has been extremely reluctant to get into hypothetical situations or various models that everybody else is talking about. But he did say repeatedly, whatever comes down, the CFP will be ready for it.
Heather, over the last couple of weeks, Brian Windhorst has weighed in on what percentage he thinks that the NBA will get games going down in Orlando and then if a champion will be crowned. Buster Olney did the same for the MLB. What percentage do you believe? I won't ask you somebody will be crowned at the end of the season. Just what percentage do you think that we're at this point that college football or college athletics will be played in the fall in the FBS?
I think that if teams that can play will play, but as we sit here today, I think it's extremely less likely that you're looking at an on-time start. So okay. I would say it's a greater than 50% chance right now that teams try to play in some form or fashion. But I mean, I hung up with Jack Swarbrick, Notre Dame's athletic director, 10 minutes before talking to you guys, and he said he thinks it's less likely that there's an on-time start. So I'll go with what he said, guys.
So you're saying Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick has said that the idea of starting on time is virtually unrealistic at this point?
He said it's less likely. He said, I am more pessimistic now than I was two weeks ago. He thinks it's less likely that there's an on-time start.
We saw that Harvard has decided for all undergraduates they'll continue their education through online courses. I've got cousins that attend SEC schools. There have been surveys sent out to parents at various schools of do you feel comfortable sending your kids back to campus this fall. Heather, what happens if presidents decide, hey, students are going to stay at their homes, we're going to continue with this online education process? Can athletics make the justification that they should be on campus and continue to play when the student body won't be on campuses in the fall, if that comes to fruition?
It depends on if they are completely off campus. I talked to Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott recently, and his son goes to USC, which also said that they're going to mainly online courses. So as a commissioner of the Pac-12 and as a parent, he gets this letter in the mail, and his son, he told me, is, I think he said he's a rising junior in communications and marketing, and, you know, he's going to be able to go on campus for some things. They're going to be able to go on campus for labs. So Larry is obviously hoping that if some students can go on campus for some things, athletics can be included in that. So I think that you have to sort through the weeds of, well, what exactly can students go on campus for? If there's no student access on campus whatsoever, not even for labs or anything like that, then I think it becomes a lot more difficult for athletic administrators to justify having student athletes back.
We live in a developing episode of a 30 for 30 being written in front of our eyes every single day. And Heather Dennis is right in the forefront of, regarding college football. Follow her on Twitter at CFB Heather. Let's talk some football of actually happening hopefully next time we speak. All right.
Thanks, Heather.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
There it is. Heather Dennis joining us here. Peter Burns, Katie George on the Dan Lebatard Show. And Peter Burns and Katie George, and always, ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. And having trouble finding time to wax your car? 303 Touchless Sealant, quick and easy alternative to wax, lasts up to two times longer than it tues. You just spray it on, rinse it off. It's that easy. Ultimate paint protection, signs in minutes, superior water beating. 303 products have been trusted for over 40 years and the official car care products of Mecum Car Collector Car Auctions. Available at O'Reilly Auto Parts, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts. Visit 303radio.com for more information. I got to tell this story. I told you I'm already pot committed to it, so I win. Hazeltine 2016 Ryder Cup is there. I get inside the ropes. Somehow I get invited to the post-game party for the U.S. team based on a player's private pilot, okay? I can't get into that party. I find myself in the European team party drinking with Sergio Garcia, watching those guys play ping pong. It's great. As we're leaving, I take this like meandering cruise throughout all the entire Sheraton Hotel in Minneapolis. I find myself where two security guards have said, no, you're supposed to go this way. I thought they were kicking me out. Instead, they thought I was part of the European Ryder Cup team. I go in and I see one of the greatest parties ever. There's a DJ there. And as soon as we get in here, Katie, they tell everybody to leave. But we're so afraid that we're in this room, me and my friend, that we hide in a corner. And they kick everybody out except the players of the Ryder Cup team. In walks Darren Clark, the captain of the European Ryder Cup team, and gives the concession speech. The U.S. Ryder Cup team is in there. Me and my friend are bent in a corner because we don't want to be seen, because we're not supposed to be in a place we're not supposed to be at that point. And we listen to the entire speech that Darren Clark gives to the U.S. American team. It was like out of a movie. It was so gracious. It was incredible. Then, all of a sudden, they open the doors back up. We go back. We're partying. Everything is great. It's just the players, Bill Murray, a couple other VIPs are in there, and somehow we get in there. And then I hear a knock-knock. And then I'm like, oh, what's happening? Lee Westwood, European Ryder Cup team. We saw him earlier in the Ryder Cup party for the European team party, was partying. He was having a good time. He comes in. Wes Tyga! I'm like, oh
hey,
my God.
Hey, that was well done.
What's about to happen here? Tyga! And then finally, they meet up in the middle of this room, okay? And we all gather around, like, and I've kind of got my phone out. I'm like, I'm going to take some pictures of this. I'm going to get paid on TMZ, right? Tyga goes, and Lee goes, Tyga, you're lucky you didn't play this week. I would have whooped your blanking, you know what? Tiger, now I've showed you guys this picture. Tiger puts a finger right in Lee Westwood's face. And he goes, Lee, you're lucky I didn't play this week, because I would have been the one that would have absolutely beat you down. And he goes, and there was tension, like we thought it was going to be a fight. Lee goes, nah, I'm just kidding, mate. Grabs Tiger Woods by the back of the neck. Open mouth kisses Tiger Woods. And everyone just loses it. Ricky Fowler's on the ground. Phil Mickelson's like, what is happening? Lee Westwood, open mouth kiss Tiger Woods. And we sit there going, did we just see the craziest thing in the history of the world?
What was Tiger's reaction?
Tiger was great with it. Tiger was just like, you son of a... I mean, he was fine. But we all thought there was going to be this fight. And therefore, that's how I saw Lee Westwood, open mouth kiss Tiger Woods in a place that I was not supposed to be. Much like the adventure that many of you guys had at the Dan Lebatard wedding. I got to get into that story as well. She is Katie George. She has follow-up questions. I'm Peter Burns, ESPN. This is a Dan Le Batard Show.